WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The U.S. is known for cutting-edge scientific research, much of it done at universities. But that's under threat as the federal government freezes funding. First, it was money from the Department of Defense. Now it's money from the premier funder of biomedical research, the National Institutes of Health. At Northwestern University, some cancer research has ground to a halt, specifically on ovarian and pancreatic cancer. Now, as we continue here on Reset to hear about the local impacts of these funding freezes, we were joined by Josh Leonard, professor of chemical and biological engineering at Northwestern. He leads the development of new cancer treatments there, and NIH funding for that program is now frozen. He began by explaining his research.
The mission of my group is to develop these emerging cancer treatments that harness the body's own immune system in order to overcome barriers to current treatment and to make that both safe and effective as well as affordable and available to all the patients who need it.
Yeah. And you focus, as I mentioned, on ovarian and pancreatic cancer. Tell me more about that.
One of the big reasons we're going after ovarian cancer primarily is that it remains a very lethal disease. Ovarian cancer is still a leading cause of death from cancer among women in the U.S., mm-hmm. with an estimated 13,000 patients this year alone who will die from ovarian cancer if we don't improve our ability to treat that. And although the emergence of these next generation of cancer treatments that harness the immune system have proven really transformative for treating blood-derived cancers, for example, those approaches don't yet work for ovarian cancer patients. But we do have reason to believe that they could work if we figured out how to apply them in the right way. And so that's why we've really mm-hmm. focused our efforts on that area.
And blood-derived cancers, meaning?
Blood cells that have turned into cancer cells. They are a different challenge than treating solid tumors, for example, which is more typical of ovarian cancer.
Yes.
And so you need, cancer is really 200 different diseases or more, and you need different tools for different types of approaches.
And so the NIH is freezing some of this funding. How did you find out that this is going to impact you?
Yeah, my personal understanding came from rumors and social media, first and foremost.
Really?
Talking with colleagues about this, and then eventually we received word from the university that for active existing projects, the NIH had simply stopped paying the bills. And to my understanding, that's the current status today as well.
Mm-hmm. And so I understand, I mean, is this, because we've been talking a lot about federal funding freezes, not just in science, but in the world of the arts, et cetera. Is this money that's been spent already, and now you've sort of gotten it pulled from underneath you, or is it money that you were expecting to receive?
It's both.
It's both.
Yeah, the way this works is there's essentially a contract between a university to do research that's been proposed to the government. The government agrees to pay that contract, and then you start doing it. And once you start incurring those costs, you send the bills, and the deal has always been that you have agreed to pay them, pay the bills. That's the normal way this works. And so this is a complete exception to anything. And in my experience from my whole career, from talking to others, it's just a complete exception.
And given the importance of the work that you're doing, you found this out on social media?
Yes, through reporting combined with, you know, posts.
How are you feeling about that?
Well, heartbroken, I think, is the best the way to describe that. I mean, one of the reasons is to think about what these freezes really, really mean, right, in practice. So when a freeze occurs, it immediately kicks the legs out from the two main reasons that we as a nation invest in academic research. The first is that these funds are used to train the next generation of scientists and engineers. This is one of those professions that really requires extensive hands-on training. You really have to learn by doing. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you stop that activity, you stop that training process. These are researchers who work very hard because they believe the work they're doing can really impact people's lives in a positive way. And when that support is frozen, that means that their jobs are in jeopardy. Mm. That means that the training they may have invested years in developing gets cut off without the skills they may need to land a job afterwards. And of course, the second big impact of a freeze like that is that it stops, as we were talking about, the conduct of the work itself.
Right.
One reason why that's crucial is that the academic leg of this race is really the upstream portion of a collaboration between publicly funded early research and downstream commercialization. And so when you cut off the research happening at a university, you prevent that development that's required to make that technology proven enough that it actually is commercially viable or is ready to be translated in the clinic. It's mm-hmm. just cut off at the legs.
So what I think I'm hearing you say is this not only impacts your staffing, it's going to delay your work. And even if you were to get the funding, like say funding was to resume next year, it would still be a long time before you folks were able to get up and running.
For sure.
Because of the impact.
Yeah. One thing that I appreciate is very hard to see from the outside is how an immediate cut like this impacts an organization. The way that these research operations work, like the team that I lead at Northwestern, we all run as little entrepreneurial efforts. So we are individually coming up with ideas. We are recruiting our personnel. And we have to be agile, we have to be adaptive, just like any startup. Mm-hmm. But what that also means is there is a certain amount of fragility there. You can break a team like that in a relatively short amount of time. Once that damage has occurred, it can take years to rebuild a team that's humming the way that we are under the best of conditions. Mm-hmm. And so when research is held, and this is hard to see, and I appreciate, but when research is made a pawn in these kind of discussions, the damage occurs very quickly and the damage mounts very quickly as well. So a lot of that has already hit. Some of the damage that we've taken as a field will take a very long time to unspool. And I think a message I'd really like to emphasize is there is an urgency to getting past where we are in this step because we can stem the damage sooner mm-hmm. if we can resolve these freezes sooner. But the consequences of those will hit society over coming years in terms of lost economic activity, slow development of medicines, and other things.
Do you think, from the federal government, is there a lack of understanding of the work that you do? Or just, is that not even being taken into consideration? What do you think?
I don't think there's a lack of understanding necessarily. I mean, and again, this is my opinion, but, I've had the benefit of working with a lot of folks in Congress and in policy over the years, and I suspect that the truth is that today there is the same broad support for the importance of science engineering that has always been the case. It's been made a political football. And I think what people don't appreciate is that making science into a hostage in these political negotiations is far more costly than I think most people appreciate. And the urgency to stop holding it in this limbo mm-hmm. is probably more acute than is appreciated.
And relatedly, I mean, how would you say university research trickles down to the private sector?
Sure. Yeah. So federally funded research is essentially a public investment in a portfolio of work that is too early, too exploratory to be viable from a commercial standpoint. Mm-hmm. And not even the biggest companies have resources needed to cover the entire spread that comprises. And so the job of research in an academic setting is really to work through those ideas, figure out which ones are good, which ones are not, and of the best ones, funnel them in mm-hmm. to a commercialization path so that the commercial sector can then take over the baton and take those ideas that are good technologies and make them into good products that actually benefit society and people's lives. So that upstream aspect is a really crucial source of innovation without which the commercial sector is starved of the inlet too.
Professor Leonard, how long have you been at this research?
Sure. Well, I'll tell it this way. So the approach that we're using is called synthetic biology, which is a new engineering discipline that works with biology to create technologies that address societal needs ranging from new medicines to environmental cleanup. And so the approach or the goal for this work is to try to coax, as I mentioned, a patient's own immune cells in order to recognize and selectively kill cancer cells. And so to do that, we have to engineer a small piece of DNA that encodes the instructions. We give that DNA to these immune cells. The cells read the instruction set and then go on and hopefully carry out that therapeutic goal. And so the work required to do that is you have to figure out what the instructions are. You have to figure out how to encode them into a piece of DNA. And so achieving progress on a project like that involves building up a lot of individual part that over time can be put together into a functioning prototype. In a way, we've been working on that since I started my lab at Northwestern in 2008, making progress towards each one of the parts, toward just as you would build up a car from a steering wheel and an engine, a transmission system. Mm-hmm. It's only once you have the parts together that you can start testing those prototypes. That's the exciting thing about where these technologies are today. We are testing prototypes, we're making them better, and figuring out how to get them over that crucial hurdle from the lab, from the bench, into the clinic or into a company.
Yeah. And just so we're clear, there are no other federal funding streams for you to draw on, right?
There is nothing that can supplant the funding from the NIH for this kind of transformative work. There is no replacement given the, just collectively given the scope of that work on the way that this really collaborative effort across many groups is making progress in this area.
Mm-hmm. NIH, this freeze also affects Northwestern's workforce development training program, which you run. Again, drive home for us the impact on the students here. I keep thinking of the grad students who are trying to get this first world experience.
Yes.
Right?
Thank you for asking that. That is a first and foremost in my mind as well. As you mentioned, I run this NIH-funded training program focused on preparing scientists and engineers to thrive in the leadership in careers in biotechnology. That program was actually funded at the direction of Congress, who received urging from the biotechnology industry to say there are these aspects of technical training that could be improved by aligning them with what people really need to thrive in the industry. And so we have built a network of these training programs to help address that specific need, as well as to help folks who are in the academic sector to better understand the research needs and opportunities learned through commercial activity. We play a role at that nexus for both of these. And so with the funding freeze, we can't support those students. We have to stop those training activities.
Could we be driving some students away from science?
I think it is evident that that is already happening. Even just the broader conversations that we're having about these risks, I think have dissuaded people from pursuing a career that they would otherwise feel is their way of really making a positive impact.
The uncertainty here. Yeah. Well, you said one earlier, but I'm sure you've got other thoughts. A message to the Trump administration.
Yeah. I mean, the real message is, I think, you know, this is an activity that benefits us all. This is an activity that we seek to make people's lives better. And the cost to society of holding research in this in-between state, holding it hostage, is much higher than most people appreciate, and those costs are mounting quickly. What we really need to do is get back to work. It's to get back to serving our role in the public's interest, because the problems that we're trying to take on, cancer, will not be waiting for us.
Yeah. Any chance you think in your gut that this funding could be restored?
I am an eternal optimist.
Yeah. We'll leave it there. Josh Leonard is professor of chemical and biological engineering at Northwestern University, who leads research into new cancer treatments. Thank you so much, Professor.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings you the news with nuance. We drop episodes twice a day during the week and a special episode on Saturdays. Click subscribe wherever you listen or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again later today.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue, as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely